Welcome to Coming From Experience, my virtual campfire where we can all gather round and share our experiences through this little thing called life. I'm your host, Annalise, and I'm here to bring you the raddest people I've come to know, sharing their stories of growth, evolution, and their unique take on universal experiences. The stories and experiences I bring to you in this podcast will span a wide variety of topics, from career changes to motherhood, personal development, spirituality, growth in relationship, health and wellness, and so much more. I hope that these stories inspire you and open up a portal for deep connection and conversation on topics that would otherwise be left untouched. Let's dive in. Finding what you had in mind. Welcome back. Today on the podcast, I have the beautiful Sally O'Neill from the Fit Foodie blog. I had the pleasure of meeting Sal a year ago now. We actually met prior to that when I was working in PR and marketing, but we caught up a year ago and I did her food photography workshop with her. And we've stayed in touch ever since. And we often just slide into each other's DMs and riff on all things nutrition, which is great fun for me. And I know she's a huge nutrition nerd as well, so good fun for her also. But in today's podcast, we really talk about Sal's experience from, I guess, moving into a state of alignment in becoming the commercial food photographer and influencer that she is today. It's not something that she's always been doing, but through, I guess, the natural course of events in life, she's found herself in this place. We talk about the evolution of her business. It's, you know, had a few different hats over its lifetime and how she's now drawing nutrition through her degree to really round out her offering and, I guess, to give depth to what she's doing on social media as well, which, by the way, is phenomenal. If you haven't come across Sal, definitely head over to the gram and follow her. She is the absolute embodiment of being you, doing you, and really also showing you how important it is, and really also embodying the importance of play. You know, there's work and then there's play, and we have to have them in equal volumes to have a really healthy, balanced life. And she is 100% a living, breathing example of that. So let's dive into today's episode. I really hope you love it and enjoy this chat that I had with Sally O'Neill. Sally, welcome to the podcast. I am so stoked to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me on. Guest number two, I hear.
Number
very
two.
Very excited about.
Super
yeah.
Super exciting. Yeah.
I feel so privileged.
Oh, thank you. I feel honored. Very honored. Now, I personally believe that asking people what they do is quite restrictive in getting to know who they are as a whole person. So I want to pose a question instead, like, how do you spend your days? Like, how can people get to know you through a general like day in the life, which I know is far from consistent for you.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I was just about to say good luck trying to work that one out.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's actually really funny. I just posted to my Instagram. I was like, I promise I don't just play all the time because I look like I'm just doing, I'm just doing fun stuff all the time. And I'm in a bit of a weird headspace with not isolation because I'm not on lockdown or anything, but just with like the whole world pandemic, right? I think we're all in a bit of a weird headspace about it. So I'm kind of playing a little bit too much and working probably not so much at the moment. Like the balance of work and life is kind of a little off kilter, but that's fine. Not complaining. A day in the life. Generally speaking, it's an awful lot of emails, an awful lot of content creation. So all the stuff that goes on my Instagram stories, all the more professional shots that go onto my Instagram feed. And then I was just chatting to you a moment ago about how off the back of the career that I've kind of built on Instagram, which I'm very grateful for, I now do professional commercial photography for restaurants and cafes and things. And so quite a lot of my time is spent either shooting or editing all that stuff and getting it over to clients. And if it's not for those guys, then it's probably for a sponsored deal that goes on Instagram.
Yeah, cool.
So there's there's all that stuff. And then there's like the admin stuff behind that. So there's contracts and dates and sign off and key messaging and all that jazz. And then
all the boring stuff.
Yeah, that's why I've got a management agency. It's like perfect. Not my area of expertise.
Yeah.
And then really, really boring stuff like finance, like sorting out bookkeeping. I'm like, yeah, so dull. But on top of that, as kind of like a side gig, I'm doing my clinical nutrition degree. So I was just literally watching lectures a couple of minutes ago, trying to get on top of my first week back at uni already, after a 6-week break over winter. So I'm 3.5 years into a 6-year part-time.
Jeez.
It's just such a commitment.
It is.
Like, it really is. Like, it feels like a lifelong commitment. I know at the end of the 6 years, I'll be stoked, but it feels like a lifelong commitment, to be honest. Like,
and your part-time load kind of looks like a full-time load. Like, it seems like a lot of subjects that you're doing.
It is. I don't understand it. I keep questioning people who do full-time, and I'm like, how are you actually doing 6 subjects? And because you get, generally speaking, you get 3 assessments per subject, and the subjects last 14 weeks. Yeah. So you're doing like 3 lots of 14 weeks of lectures at once, and full-time you're doing 6 lots. So you're just watching like so many hours of lectures, and then doing all the pre-read, or I clearly don't, but like they're doing all the pre-reading and they've got the textbooks and everything. I just wing it.
Yeah.
I'm actually really bad. I'm one of those people who like remembers 2 weeks before that there's an exam. I'm like, oh, I should cram for the last 10 weeks that I haven't paid attention to. So
yeah,
I'm that girl. But I've been getting by so far.
Good. Yeah, you're not alone.
Priorities, right?
I know, right.
So yeah, P's make degrees. I did have a business degree from the UK when I was originally there. And so this is kind of my second time around at doing a degree. So I feel like I've learned a lot from not having such high expectations into, like, it's really important obviously to learn as much as you can, but not having such high expectations about getting high distinctions on everything when I actually have a life going on at the same time as well. And I want to enjoy that while it's here. So
100%.
It's a weird fine balance between that. And then, as I was saying, building a lot of play in at the moment, because I think we need it and we don't do enough of it. And I'm very fortunate to have such a flexible working environment. Like, I call the shots, which is lovely.
The best.
So this morning, like, ordinarily I'll go to the gym, and at the moment I'm doing powerlifting, which is really interesting.
Juicy.
I've never done it before. I know. I feel like it's such a girl when I step in the boys' gym, and they're all just looking at me like, who's this little blonde English chick who definitely won't be able to lift anything?
And you're like, boom.
Yeah, bam. Here's a 110 hip thrust. Yeah. I'm training with a coach there, which is really interesting. So I'm just trying to get my technique spot on cool. So I can lift heavy. And it's just a new challenge, because I find that I just need to keep my brain stimulated, particularly like at the moment. I just like to set new challenges and keep it fresh and stuff in the gym. So I'm generally training for a couple of hours in the morning. So I wake up about 4 o'clock because my housemate, she's just wildly early and I can't sleep through it. So
my goodness.
I get up with her, and then I get to the gym for like 5:30, and then I train for a couple of hours, have a coffee, walk around my suburb, chill out at a cafe for a bit. And then I'll generally in an afternoon either like skateboard or I played basketball this morning with a mate, which was really fun.
Fun.
Because we're getting into the nicer weather now, which is lush.
Yes, so good, so needed.
That's kind of how it's looking at the moment. It's all a bit random here, there and everywhere, and it's literally like whatever the day presents to me, I kind of adapt. And in that 7 days a week, I don't really do weekends, just because there's deadlines and, you know, work never really shuts down. So, and neither does Instagram. Wouldn't it be great if Instagram had like a shutdown for a week?
Yeah, like work hours.
Announced it. Yeah. How great would that be? So like, we're just going to take a break for isolation, guys.
Collectively,
it's not going to work. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my daily routine that isn't really routine.
Hey, whatever works, right?
Yeah, it's fun.
You probably need to build so much play into your day, especially if you're going 7 days. Like, if you're not having those 2 dedicated days, and incorporating that in is going to be vital for your sanity.
Absolutely right. And that's my break time. Like, a lot of people go and stand at the water cooler or go out for a walk at lunch. And I generally, it's terrible, but I sit at my desk with my lunch.
Yeah.
And I'll be answering emails and whatever. And then I try and take a couple of hours in the afternoon to get some sunshine and get out in the fresh air. So it's just whatever works best for you, right, at the time. Oh. And it it changes like literally every 3 months. My whole system will change where like I'll start working out in an afternoon or whatever it looks like. So I don't really have too much of a routine, but I find that the play thing at the moment is really important because what I used to do pre-ISO, which feels like a lifetime ago, was I used to work solidly for 6 to 8 weeks, like not have a day off. And then I would go traveling for a month or like two to three weeks to a month, depending on what I needed. And I would do content, but just fun stuff. And I'd kind of put a hold on my contracts and I'd just disappear and find somewhere new and go solo and explore the world. And I loved it. And it always gave me something to look forward to, right? And it's an education in itself, travel, I always say. And obviously trying all local foods and stuff. But now I don't get that because we're obviously...
Bloody Rona.
I know, right? Screwed us. So, yeah, I'm not doing all the travel, but I'm trying to build in regular play dates with myself, like a child.
I love that.
Got to look after her.
That's so good. And I think, like, essentially hearing your day anyway pretty much sums you up. Like, you're so dynamic. You're so on the go. Like, you're constantly, like, I feel like you're just throwing different balls up in the air all the time and still managing to catch them. And I know so many people, like, really look up to you for your capacity to do that and be that role model of, like, yeah, I work really hard, but I play just as hard and I nourish my body and I feed myself right. And I know people absolutely love you for it.
Oh yeah, it's really interesting. I think it's come, I'm sure we'll chat about it soon, but it's come from a lot of doing things wrong. That's how we all learn, right? Like, you've got to 100%. Do it wrong to change it and get it right. And so I've definitely had periods of like having really bad relationships with food, then having like really bad relationship with my work, like just working far too much and working into the night and to be honest, just grinding too hard to the point where it's detrimental. Like, and I've really learned to kind of, this is going to sound real hippie, sorry, but like let the universe kind of,
I'm so for that. Yeah.
It's not my back. And I know that I just have to trust that when I step back from all the grinding and the pursuing of things, that stuff still comes my way and that's perfectly fine. So I can go out and play and I can do stuff and I don't have to be chained to my computer and I can be more productive when I'm at my computer because I am managing my time better. So it's not necessarily like the hours you spend staring at a screen, which I've learned over time. So I really just did think like, you know, volume over anything would get me to where I wanted to be. But yeah, it's just, you know, end up in burnout, right? And not a productive person and not a happy person. And then it brings out a million other issues. So I've got what feels like a really good balance, I think. And I feel so privileged, like I really do mean this, to be in a position where I get to play every day. And that I live in such an incredible city with sunshine, like so many days of the year. And it's just... like, it's really incredible that I've come from the UK where there's not a lot of sunshine. I wasn't a particularly happy person there. And it's just like been an absolute game changer for me. So I just don't take it for granted any day I get. And the fact that I've got, I know this is going to sound again really hippie, but the fact that I've got a full use of my body. Like to be able to go outside and play and go on a skateboard. Like, not everyone can do that, and like appreciating that and really making use of what you've got, because it might not be around forever.
Yeah, totally. I know we can so easily take that stuff for granted, and then something happens and you're like, oh, fuck me. Like, I've had this the whole time and I didn't even realize. So I guess you really touched on a key point here. Like, a lot of what happens in our life is by coming through experiences, right? It's by what we live through. It's by, you know, what enriches us, what teaches us lessons. And I guess people might see you today and just think, like, Sal's got it sorted. Like, she's amazing. Like, you're one of the lucky ones, right? But I would love for you to share kind of your story, your experience to getting where you are today. Because I know you haven't always been doing this. And it kind of really happened quite organically for you to step into this really multifaceted role that you're in. So I'd love for you to share whatever feels relevant.
For sure. Okay. Take a seat. Get comfortable. Yes. I'm going to take it.
Pour a cuppa.
I'll give you a really brief overview. But in terms of childhood, it was actually really quite not a fun experience. So I got really bullied in school. My mum had a lot of mental health problems. My dad left when I was quite young. He was abusive. My brother sexually abused me as a kid. So there was a lot of stuff that went on, and I was just not a particularly happy child, as you might imagine.
Yeah,
although
for sure.
I was still straight A student, and I think, which is weird. And I think my work ethic came from, so I had to get a job when I was 13 because my parents couldn't afford my school uniform and stuff.
Oh my goodness.
But it was amazing, right? Because like, although yes, it's tricky, I wouldn't want my 13-year-old, if I had a child, to be doing that. It taught me amazing work ethic. It's like I knew at the age of 13, if I worked hard and got money, I then had freedom almost to do and buy what I wanted to. And so that from an early age gave me the kind of mindset that the more effort I put in, the greater the output.
Yeah.
And so, and that translated to schoolwork as well. And I have to say, although my dad wasn't amazing at giving affection, he would give massive amounts of affection if I did well in school. So I think it became like a conditioned response of like, if I get straight A's,
I get love.
Mm. Yeah. And so that's, and I still probably have that conditioning. So I have to excel at everything. Like, it drives me nuts if I don't. And if I'm not amazing at something, like, I just, like, I'm over it straight away. Like, I'm not.
I'm done. Moving on.
Like, I tried really hard. I did it for a few months. I'm not where I want to be. I'm moving past it. Let's pick something else. Such a child.
Such a child.
And so, yeah, that's kind of my very brief beginning. Mm-hmm. And then, so when I hit 24, I was working for I did a business degree, and then I started working for the National Health Service. And this is back in the UK where I was raised. Mm-hmm. And I was actually in obesity. It's actually to do with stomach stapling, the operations.
Oh, yeah.
And so I would triage people based on the national criteria for obesity, whether they were going to get operations or not, which is really interesting.
Very.
But like, it really opened my eyes to, I suppose, chronic disease and lifestyle contributors to that. And it kind of amazed me at how many people were struggling with food related issues and environmental stuff as well. Yeah. So that was really, really interesting. But then I actually was employed on a maternity contract, and the NHS freaked out with their finances across the whole of the UK and put a recruitment freeze on. And just as my maternity contract ended, that came into play. So they couldn't rehire me on the contract. So I was literally without a job.
Nice.
And kind of like, oh, this is not ideal. So my then boyfriend actually said to me, he also worked for the NHS, and he said, let's just go traveling. We didn't do it, you know, I went to uni and I didn't travel, I just went straight into work. Why don't we go traveling for a bit? And I was like, well, I haven't really got anything else to do, so let's do it. Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
And so we did Thailand for 2 weeks, we went to Melbourne for 7 weeks.
Wow.
And yeah, we were gonna actually hang out in Melbourne, but we kind of got there and we're like, huh, where are the coconuts and the palm trees? I'm so confused. Because I've literally done no research about Australia. I literally just had it in my mind that it was like Gold Coast everywhere.
Everywhere was the Gold Coast, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
Not the
like,
case.
Like, it's just
Melbourne is the furthest from that as well.
Right, I know. I was like, this is kind of like England.
Yeah.
With great coffee. Yeah, yes. I was just like, this is disappointing. So yeah. We were there until New Year's Eve of 2010. Mm-hmm. And then New Year's Eve, we obviously came up to Sydney to do the tourist thing and see the fireworks. And within a couple of weeks, we were kind of running out of funds pretty fast because Australia's expensive compared to the UK. And I got an admin job. And within that admin job, within 2 weeks, I got offered sponsorship because apparently I was the best admin girl they'd ever had, which was just obscene, but like the luckiest break. I can file well, apparently,
yes,
which is like awesome. I know, great skills.
That business degree really paying off.
So paid off, right? So then they actually created a job for me that was a project management role, which was really cool. But it was in education delivery. So it was teaching certificate of management to architects, actually, at like Bovis Lendlease, which is a bit random. And then, so I did that for a couple of years and I was a bit bored, to be honest. And during that time, so I'd come over from the UK with absolutely no cooking skills whatsoever. Mm. I could not boil an egg.
Right.
And like, it was that bad. And I got to Melbourne, and when we were in Melbourne, I remember walking out of the supermarket on Flinders Street. And I phoned my mum and I'm like, Mum, there's no microwave meals in there. help. This is back in 2010, right? So there was actually like not as much as there is now.
For sure.
Significantly different.
Yeah.
And I was like, I need you to give me some recipes like ASAP because I'm going to die or live on cereal for like the next 6 months. So hurry up. And she sent me like a really basic stir fry, a lasagna. What else did she send me? A bolognese, you know, all the basics, like you can do it in one pan kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I was actually really shocked at some of the ingredients she was using. So I started like recreating it, obviously, like trying to learn to cook for myself. And like I was making bolognese and she puts jam in the meat.
Oh God.
To make it, isn't that gross? It's so English. Apparently the sweetness brings out the flavor of the meat. Right. I don't know. It's like the salty sweet combo thing. And it doesn't actually taste like jam because you only put like a couple of tablespoons in. But still disgusting. Like just
it's like not necessary. Sugar or,
yeah, it's so unnecessary. Yeah. And so there was a lot of unnecessary ingredients in a lot of the stuff that she said to me. So I was like, I'm just going to drop that. And I also don't have jam. So that's fine. Yeah. And so I ended up sending the recipes back to her, essentially healthier kind of, without all the bits and bobs that she was adding in. And so it kind of went on for about 6 months where I was learning to cook and doing new things and trying different stir fries and like all that jazz. And I ended up starting to bake a little bit, and it got to the point where I'd sent her so many emails that I could never make anything twice because I literally couldn't find it in this like string of emails.
Yeah.
So my then boyfriend said to me, hey, let's get it online so she can log in and see it. And he set it up for me. I had absolutely no idea what I was doing. And I put recipes on there, and the website, it was a website, right? But I didn't actually know what, like, I thought it was just like an online directory. I'm so not tech savvy.
Yeah. A little private space for you and her.
Exactly. Like a MySpace of recipes, if you will. Mm-hmm. It turned out that it was a blog and that it was public. And about 4 months later, my boyfriend logged on and said, hey, you know, it's not just your mum looking at this. Like, you can actually see statistics from all over the world. And there's like people from France and Germany. And I'm like, oh my God, there's people looking at this. That's horrible. So I gave it a logo. I started adding photos of the food, which was great. And then it ended up being a blog. Mm. So that's how the blog started, which was super random.
Was it called the Fit Foodie then, or did it have a different name?
It wasn't called the Fit Foodie. It was
cookbook.
No, do you know, it was something real. Oh, purelydeliciousrecipes.com.
Love it.
So cool, right? So cool. And then I think about 6 months later, I was like, that's not that catchy, actually. Mm. So I'm just going to switch it up. So we went from that to the Fit Foodie. And then at that point in time, Instagram was kind of taking off. As we were going along in the timeline. So I adopted Instagram. I started posting some of these horrible photos that I was taking on my iPhone and adding the recipes in. And at the time, because I was an early adopter, my following grew pretty quickly. And I started posting, which I kind of resent now, but I started posting like body shots of myself in the gym, which at the time I thought was a great idea. And it was more like an accountability thing for myself. And I didn't really do it for followers. It was more kind of like, oh, look how far I've come. I'm doing well. And I wasn't actually training a lot. I wasn't that bothered about the gym, to be honest. But as I progressed and I got more following, people were like super support, like overly supportive in a really lovely way. But it got to the point where like, I suppose I was a bit addicted to the dopamine hit of people saying, oh my God, you look amazing. You've lost a load of weight. You've got abs showing, this, that, and the other. Mm-hmm. And so healthy recipes combined with, going to the gym, getting a million compliments, followers growing really quickly. I got so interested in health, nutrition, pretty much to the point where anything that passed my mouth, I knew macro and micronutrients to the nth degree. Like really? It was quite interesting. Yeah. Mm. And not a healthy mindset at all because it became all encompassing. It was just like full on all the time. Mm-hmm. So like I can literally reel off to you exactly what's in an egg. And obviously like as a future nutritionist, that's really helpful. But as a member of the general public, it's probably a bit too much information. It's like, you don't really need to know how much biotin is in an egg.
Yeah.
So, so interestingly that kind of progressed. And then I ended up with, I ended up losing my periods, which was the first kind of red flag for me. So I went to my GP and said, this is weird. Don't really understand what's going on. And she said, hop on the scales. And I'm 167 centimeters. So like 5'6" and a bit.
Yeah.
And I was 43 kilos.
Little.
So very, very little. Mm. Not a lot of body fat at all. I think I was 12% body fat. Wow. For a woman is not optimal. and hence my period stopped. Mm. And I genuinely didn't realize I had a problem. It was so strange. I went thinking, that's weird, my fertility's not right. Mm. And is it going to affect me long term, and what the hell is going on? And so she was actually one of the worst GPs I've ever come across, in all really? Honesty. And I had 5 minutes with her. She got me on the scales. She said, you're anorexic.
Ooh.
Just the delivery was literally like that.
No bedside manners.
Nothing. Mm. And no like quiet delivery. It was just like, this is what you've got. It's anorexia. You need to do yoga instead of going to the gym, and you need to eat more. Next, literally.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay. So I kind of walked out of there, started crying in the street.
Mm-hmm.
By this time I'm 27.
Yeah.
So I've had like 3 years in Oz, and it's just progressed and progressed. And then I was like, no, I don't agree with that, because I'm not hiding food. I actually eat a lot of food. I eat with my boyfriend. I'm not skipping meals. Yeah. I train really hard. Yeah, absolutely. I probably train like 2-3 hours a day. But I still eat volume of food. So I couldn't get my head around that. And I went to see a GP who then specialized in mental health. And I went to her and she said, I don't think it's anorexia, and I'm also going to report the other GP.
Yes.
Which was epic.
So good.
And she said, I'm pretty sure it's something that's kind of on the up, which is called orthorexia, which is rather than an obsession with being thin, it's an obsession with the healthiest diet.
Mm.
Which really resonated with me, and being the healthiest person you can be. So like for me, that included exercise as well. And so my weight had dropped, even though I was eating volume of food, it was very low calorie food.
Yeah.
So it was like massive iceberg lettuce salads with like 2 eggs for dinner. And I thought that was a lot of food, but in terms of calorie density, it was like 200 calories. Like it's not a meal.
Yeah.
And then I was training an awful lot. So I got super obsessed with my step count, and like my heart rate monitor was, I literally had a chest strap and it was on me 24/7. Like, come on, so unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought I needed to know everything. I needed to know like what I was burning, what my resting heart rate was, why is it not going down? Am I getting fitter? Am I going faster? And it just became a mask game on top of then the calories of like, I started logging calories then, and I'm like in my fitness pal, like I've eaten this much, so I need to burn this much. And then it was just ridiculous. It just got way too far. I got so into it. And so got sick, went to see a psychologist to get some help, and very slowly started to reduce the amount of exercise I was doing. So I took it down from about 30,000 steps a day to like 29,500 steps like a day. So I literally was just like, hold up, honestly, my mind was like, you are going to get fat, which is actually crazy. Like,
obviously
not in a good mental health space.
Mm.
And it took me about probably 6 months with a psychologist, seeing her every other week, to really get on top of it, which I actually think was a very brief and lucky stint with that said mental health condition, because some people, you know, can deal with it for life. My weight regained really quickly. But what I will say from that is, once your weight's regained, you're not particularly mentally at the same level. You don't have to be. So I was still tackling a lot of stuff from a mental health perspective, in terms of, if I eat this, how long do I need to burn it? How long do I need to be on the treadmill for to burn it off? Mm. All that kind of like association between calories in, calories out all the time drove me mental, to the point where I was constantly obsessed with what was in and out. So it took me probably maybe another year after that 6 month kind of recovery period to get on top of the thought process and have a much better relationship with food. And then probably, so that was when I was 27, went on till, I don't know, say I was like 29, I'm 33, turning 34 in a couple of months.
Yeah.
And now I have the best relationship with food. Like, it's just, I probably think in some respects I had to go through it to be in such a healthy space now.
Yeah.
Because I know any slight thought or red flag to me, like I'm so hyper aware of it, of like, don't be ridiculous. You don't need to worry about the calories in a piece of chocolate. You know, like, because girls, like, you know, we might have a couple of Oreos and be like, oh shit, I've eaten the whole packet now. Now I should really go and work out or whatever, and start feeling guilt. Whereas as soon as I start to have that tiny thought process, I cut it off straight away. And I'm like, it's food.
Yeah.
It is energy. And some of it's packaged in more nutritious forms and some of it isn't. And that's it. And you don't need to worry about it. And honestly, I've gone through with the powerlifting thing, I'm now going through trying to put on weight.
Yeah.
It's the complete opposite of what every girl really is like normally trying to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you now, it has taken me 8 months to put on 2.5 kilos, right? But yeah, we freak out and honestly think like, oh my God, I'm going to put on a kilo in a few weeks because I've been eating chocolate regularly. And it's like, it's your body actually really wants to sit at its baseline. We fluctuate so much throughout a month, water retention, periods, you know, just any, all of that jazz. And it's like, realistically, to actually up your weight, it's a lot of work.
It is,
it's actually
yeah,
really, really hard, particularly if you have a fairly healthy diet. So yeah, that's kind of the journey with food and my mental health. And in terms of the blog, it got then found on LinkedIn by a publisher, which was super random.
So insane.
So random. She literally slid into my emails and was like, hey, so I found you on LinkedIn and I kind of like your website and stuff, and I just wondered if you want to come in for a meeting. I was like, oh, okay, sure. And went into these offices and I'm like, oh, it's actually like a huge magazine house.
Was this Bauer at the time?
Bauer. Yeah. Bauer Media. So they're the people who do the Australian Woman Weekly and Gourmet Traveller. And I was like, oh, cool. Well, maybe they'll ask me to do like the intro to a woman's weekly cookbook. This is going to be great.
Yeah.
And I went in there trying to be professional, like, stay calm, O'Neill, stay calm. Like, you do this all the time. And I went and sat at a round table with like 4 or 5, what I felt like a child, and they're like very adult because they're all in suits and I'm like rocking up in my gym gear like, hey, guys. They actually said, hey, we want to take what's on your blog and we want to turn it into a book. Can you send us all the raw files? And I'm like, yeah, sure. I don't know what that means, but I'll go home and send you the pictures. So I did. And they said, no, we actually need their JPEG. We need the raw files. So to anyone at home that doesn't actually know what a raw file is, it's basically like a really, really high quality format of a photo, but your camera has to be set on a particular setting to get it to shoot that way. And I didn't know that because I wasn't a professional photographer and I didn't have raw files. I only had JPEGs. And so I was like, well, yeah, I can't actually send you those. So we're probably going to have to shoot the whole thing. And they said, okay, will you do it? Will you shoot the whole thing again? And I was like, okay. They said, look, we'll give you half a day with somebody from Gourmet Traveller. Ooh. And they'll come out. I know, amazing.
So
like
cool.
Literally world's best opportunity. She came over to my house and then they sent an incredible stylist, called Sophia from, Women's Weekly. She came over and they had an afternoon with me and said, let's shoot one of the recipes from your book and we'll take it. We'll show you how we do it. And we'll show you how to edit. We'll show you what software we use. We'll show you how to set your camera up and then you're on your own. You've got 70 recipes. You've got about 6 weeks.
Right? Oh.
Cool. So I was watching like 1,000 YouTube videos at night. And, you know, I was saying like the work-life balance thing at some points was definitely off. This was one of those moments. So it was like hundreds and hundreds of YouTube videos, one after another, of how to style, how to take a photo, Pinterest boards coming out my ears for inspiration. And then I started sending some snaps that I'd taken to Bauer for a bit of feedback and they helped me with that. And then, yeah, I shot a cookbook, which was random.
That's insane. With no experience, like, really?
Literally,
self-taught.
Literally none. Yeah. Self-taught, no experience. And so, yeah, that happened. And then I did a second one more recently with a different publisher. So that was Meal Prep Plan. It was out last October.
Yeah.
And that was with Murdoch.
Yeah.
So that was really fun. And I got to shoot it in a different apartment with a lot more space and a prep chef, which was amazing.
So good.
So lucky. But in the middle of all that, so in the middle of book one, I I keep saying then boyfriend. It sounds really awful because he's my best friend still now, yeah. But he's not my boyfriend anymore. This guy that I was with for 10 years called Graham. Mm-hmm. And he had a motorcycle accident pretty much at the start of me shooting the book. And it was really, really severe. He got airlifted to Westmead Specialist Hospital to be put in an ICU unit for 3 weeks. He couldn't breathe on his own. He collapsed his lung. He pulled off his own helmet while he was unconscious, and he broke something in the back of his neck. And it was just such a horrendous experience. So he couldn't feed himself. He couldn't wash himself. And so when he was discharged, he was in the house in a wheelchair in a one-bedroom, very small apartment. Whilst I was trying to cook, shoot, style and everything on the floor of the apartment with him in a wheelchair who couldn't feed himself. So like every couple of minutes, it's like, babe, can you just pass me my drink through the straw? And it's like, I'm just in the middle of taking a shot, but so my patience was incredibly tested. It was a really, really difficult time, but totally a great life lesson, right? Like you learn from all these things.
Of course.
Resilience, I think that one was. So that was really interesting. And then fortunately, his mum just saw me struggling and quit a job and flew over and was like, I'm just going to sleep on your couch, guys. So then I had mother-in-law in the same space that I was shooting a cookbook in this tiny room. I was like, this is just too much. So second one went a lot more smoothly, which was delightful.
That's good. And he's all good now, isn't he?
He's great. Yeah. Saw him last night. He's like, everything works. All his shoulders and everything are fine. Like perfect. He's good. He's good. Yeah.
Just checking.
He's good now. So yeah, it was the whole journey has been such an interesting experience. Mm.
Did you ever see yourself getting to that place of like creating a cookbook and that being your job?
Never.
Like, being
never,
in
ever.
Your dream job right now?
No. And do you know what's really weird? It's so funny. I'm living a dream life, but I never dreamt it, if that makes sense. So I never sat there and thought, like, I would love to say that I did because it sounds really cool, but I didn't. I didn't sit there and go, my goal is to be a commercial food photographer. Like it was presented to me and I was like, this is really fun and I love food and I get to be creative. And if I wasn't being paid to do this, I'd probably do it as a hobby because it's fun. So now I get paid to do something that I genuinely love to my core. And I just like, it's so weird to me still that people will hand over money for me doing something that I would be doing for fun. Like it doesn't actually make sense. Like I can't compute it. And so I'm incredibly fortunate. And the fact that it was presented to me through LinkedIn originally was just so, it obviously like a stroke of luck. Like it's not something that you can kind of work towards. Realistically, it was literally someone found me randomly on a social media or like on a work networking website, and that really was pivotal in my career. So
what year was that?
Oh, good question. I think probably 2015 or 16.
Yeah, right.
And then it took a year to shoot the book, get it all printed and edited and whatever, and then get it on shelf. I think it was on shelf in 2017.
Yeah.
And then I had like a year's break and then started with Murdoch on the next one. Yeah, on the meal prep one. And that took a year and that came out last October. So it's been a year since then. So it's probably due for another one now.
What's next?
Thinking about it. Yeah. Good question. Good question. It's just been a kind of a journey of chance, but also a lot of hard work and a lot of throwing myself in the deep end to learn stuff that I didn't know and just trusting the process, which I know sounds really hippie, but it really was just, you know, like I trust that if I work hard enough, the outcome will be success. And that's literally like, there's nothing else. There is no other outcome. So it's just time, it's energy and it's practice. And it's just, you've just got to stick at it if it's something you really, really care about and you'll get there. And you don't know that like you're opening doors for your future when you're grinding really hard. You don't know what doors you're opening for your future. So it's just like, just go and know that eventually your work will pay off. So now, modern day, if you will, it's my Instagram is essentially now a platform to showcase the work that I do commercially. So like shooting for brands and that kind of thing, and doing people's websites and shooting for supplements companies and things for like their new packaging launches and all that kind of thing. And working with really cool brands like Pucker that I'm working with at the moment, and Thermomix, doing recipes for those guys, recipe development for them, and It's just really fun. It's literally like a client will come to me and say, can you make like 5 dishes and take some snaps? I'm like, yeah, that sounds like a dream job.
It really does. Yeah. The cherry on top.
I know, right? I get to eat my work. It's just like divine.
It's divine. So good. So good. And I feel like it has kind of just seemed like this thing where, call it divinity, like call it whatever you want to call it, but it's kind of just really unraveled in a way where you were probably always meant to be doing what you're doing today.
I feel really like that is the case. And I think it's really interesting from a business perspective, and certainly from my degree perspective, and all the stuff that I was taught, everyone's like, have a plan, have a 5-year plan, have a strategy in place, have a 6-month goal, have a this, have a that, every month come back to your like your targets. And that's fine, but there's also an element of taking opportunities as they arise and not shutting down to them because it's not part of the plan, because you just don't know what is going to arise. So when people say to me like, oh, you know, what's coming up next year? I'm like, today, whatever the world presents.
Yeah, like, for sure.
Like if somebody says to me, do you want to do a podcast? So they're like, yeah, I'll do a podcast. Or do you want to start a YouTube channel? Or do you want to do, I'm like, yeah, I will, because it's been presented to me and I feel like it's part of my path. And if I'm really passionate about it, then I'll take it up.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to say to myself, like, in 5 years' time, I want to have had 10 more cookbooks and this, that, and the other, because I could be shutting myself off to really cool things that I don't know about yet.
Yes, exactly.
So I don't really have a plan. I literally am a bit of a free spirit, like winging it every day. And
yeah, just I love that life. Though. I think that's important because my friend who was on the first episode, Brittany, she always says to people, like, think back to January. Like, could you imagine that where you are today is where you would be? Like, how can you future predict? How can you like possibly look further 100%. Than the present moment? Like, you just don't know what's going to happen. I mean, the pandemic is evidence enough.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's been a huge lesson for us all. Certainly more so for me, because I'm a complete control freak, self-admitted. But, we really only have control over a very small circle of things in our space. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why obviously eating disorders are a big thing, because food intake is a control. And we do have control over it. Exercise is something we have a control over. But really outside of that, there's not loads of stuff that we've got control over. Like, yes, you can control where you live. Do you control your income? Not really, because let's have a look at the global pandemic. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a million people now unemployed. And do you have control over your health? Not always. Genetics and environment are at play. Like, there's so much. You could have an accident tomorrow and lose use of your legs. Do you know? Yeah. It's like, it's literally like there's so many things we cannot control. And so I think that's why I'm all for like opportunities presenting themselves, because if you turn down things that you're actually really passionate about, or you don't pursue things that present themselves, you don't know what you're missing out on. You don't know how you can grow and learn and adapt and evolve. And like, honestly, if someone had have said to me like 7 years ago, you're going to be a photographer, and I'd literally never picked up a phone with even a camera on it. I had like the old school, like Sony Ericsson thing. I just would have laughed. Like, I actually would have had no idea. So it's amazing how it's all kind of worked out for me. And no wonder I'm so happy and positive and get all the work done, because it's like literally more than I could have ever dreamed.
Yeah. And you can really, like, you often hear people say, like, when they're creating things, whether it's platforms, businesses, social media, you know, for influence or whatever, like kind of bricks and mortar type business. But, you know, when it's coming from a place of like desire and like passion and like the outcome not really being about like, this is going to make me money or this is going to give me success. Like, this is just something I enjoy. There's such a different like feeling towards
energy.
That.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And funny you say that, because I didn't mention that in the middle of this story, I started a protein bowl mix business.
Yes.
So it was a
fit
product. Yeah. So I had fit mixes, and it was a product based business. And I wanted to, this is pre cookbook, but I wanted to monetize the blog and I didn't know how to do it. So I thought, I'll create a product. And I started going to Bondi farmers markets, and I sold protein balls and snacks and chocolate and all that kind of thing. And I did it twice. I did it like 2 weekends, and I realized how much energy goes into doing a market stall and like setting up super early and like doing the hard sell to sell something that's $3 that probably costs you $2 to make. I'm like, what am I actually doing here? This is like financially not the right thing to be doing. And I don't even enjoy it. So because I'm a terrible salesperson. I hate selling stuff to people. So what I decided is I needed to find a way of scaling it and also not be a salesperson. So I created a dry mix in a bag that was a protein ball mix, which was one of the first to the market, which was cool. Sold it into a couple of health food stores, and then it ended up growing way beyond what I could have imagined. And it we ended up having 350 stores. I say I mean me, because there was nobody else involved. The company had 350 stores. And then America came to me, American Apparel, and said, hey, we want to have it in store in America. And I was like, you know what? Like, the whole shipping thing and containers and new nutrition labels, I'm like, this is just so beyond my, like, I can't actually just keep Googling things. I really actually need someone who knows the stuff. So, like, it got me so far, and then my limit was reached. And I was like, yeah, and do you know what? At the end of the day, it wasn't my passion. So coming back to the, you know, making money and really living in what you love and creating things. I've always been creative. I was amazing at, I say amazing, I used to love art in school and English and all the fun stuff. But like with business itself, me creating a brand and having to sell that did not light my fire at all. It earned me money. And so April last year, I sold it and I've never felt more free. And like amazing. It was literally like the most delightful experience to get rid of it and have extra space to do things that I care about, like my nutrition degree, and spend a bit more time on that and really actually absorb some of the information. Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry, I've got somebody at the door. That's buzzing. Okay. In the background.
Do you need to go?
No, we'll ignore him.
Okay,
it's probably the post who like lives at my apartment anyway, so all good. That's kind of how I feel about, you know, earning money for the sake of earning money, and like the difference between doing something that you're passionate about and something that you're doing to just fill up your bank account. You're right, like at the moment, like certainly with isolation, work has really slowed down. I was saying like a lot of my restaurants have closed, but I'm still able to build in lots of play and do lots of fun stuff, and I'm just letting it be for now. Like, it's fine that there's not heaps of work coming in, because I can focus on my degree, I can still build on my skills and use it as a chance to improve and perfect my craft. So it's actually a bit of a pleasant pause on everything that's been going on for the last 7 years, to really just slow down and be like, okay, I'm not going to travel. I'm going to focus on me. What new challenges can I set myself? It's kind of nice in a weird way. We're just all adopting and still getting into the headspace of it, I think.
Yeah, I think so. And I guess kind of what you really touched on there is that while you have this great capacity to say yes to things and to be really open and receptive, you also have this like discernment around, well, this doesn't serve me anymore. And so like, you kind of have to let shit go.
And absolutely. I feel
like that creates so much more magnetism like within you to like then have like bigger projects perhaps come in thereafter with working with restaurants and allowing for what you truly love to flower even more and to grow.
Definitely. And I think it's really interesting, because I've been so good at that from a business perspective, I've been really good at that and saying, you know, certainly to sponsored stuff on Instagram, if it's not my jam, I wouldn't use it. I don't want to promote it. It's not got good ingredients in for me. I'm not going to take the money that is waved at me, because it's my platform is and my audience is one that I respect, and so I do have very clear boundaries. But what I find really interesting is in my personal life, I have no boundaries. And I've really had to work on that this year. That's one thing I've really got out of 2020, of like saying no to people that use me or disrespect me or take advantage of me. And so it's really interesting now. I've started to really, and I've only done it in the last few months, but really take control of those boundaries and say, you know what, this person doesn't serve me in the way that I needed them to serve me. And it's more of an exchange, and it's a friendship or whatever it might be. I've opened up a lot more space for really beautiful people to step in, and it's completely changed my circle of friends, and like romantically as well, it's completely changed the game. So I'm like, wow, it's like, I can't believe I can do that so easily in business, but then I'm a lot less discerning in personal relationships with people.
So much more attachment there. Sometimes.
Right? Yeah.
It can be.
Exactly. It's like I'm like very rational, but then the heart just does other things. Mm. So, and I'm just a very empathetic person, I think. So I just want to fix everybody and do stuff for them. And it's not always reciprocated. So it's been a very interesting 8 months of 2020.
Yeah. Oh God. I know. I can't even believe it's been 8 months. I'm like, where has this year gone? Like,
what a shit show. With the world? What is going on?
So mad.
Wild.
A few things I wanted to kind of talk about there is, I guess, in the Instagram space, and I mean, I really see you as being so authentic to yourself. And I know so many people see that within you, and you have like phenomenal engagement in stories and like on Instagram. And I know you've brought nutrition into your work now, and you're studying, and you're really open with like your nutrition advice and sharing what you're learning. And I think it's cool for you to take people on that journey.
Yeah, thank you.
What brought you to doing that with the nutrition, like integrating that into your business?
Oh, it's so interesting. So I started the degree, like as I was saying, 3.5 years ago, and I took it on because just before a second cookbook deal happened, because I didn't, sounds really awful, no shade on Pete Evans, but at the time it was like a whole Pete Evans saga in the media about how he wasn't properly qualified to be talking about nutrition. And so I kind of freaked out. I was like, you know what, it's 100% my responsibility to have proper education so that when people do come to me, I'm not giving out naff advice. And so I was like, no, I need to sort this, and it's not going to be fixed with a 6-week online course. I need to, this is just my like A-type personality. Like I have to do everything to the nth degree and research everything and whatever. So I'm like, now I'm going to do a proper degree. So that started. And I think what really shocked me, because I'm a bit of an idiot, is that I looked at the qualification. I said, okay, clinical nutrition, that sounds fun. I'm going to contact a uni. I can't really afford 40 grand for a degree, but I'm going to see if I promote them, can I work with them in some way to get a discount? And in complete, I suppose, authenticity or clarity, I got 50% off my fees as an ambassador. But they said, if they've never done it before, and they were like, yeah, let's do it. And in exchange, I have to speak twice at open days and stuff like that. And then I think I have to tag them in a few stories and whatever. But there's no, what I got off the back of it was this access to information and journals, as you'll know, that are really confusing, actually. Not a lot of it is understandable by the average person.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize as part of a nutrition degree that it was going to be so science-based. So me being me, like, didn't really read the whole curriculum. I was just like, yeah, the first one sounds good, I'll do it. And then, yeah, I looked at all the other subjects. I'm like, oh, clinical biochemistry, that's going to be interesting. And I actually was not good at science in school. So I really struggled through my first year. And so much basic science, but like mitochondria and ATP and cell division and the cell cycle and doing all that stuff again, really like kind of threw me left field. And it was, I just wasn't expecting it. And so what I found was actually sharing that information and being really honest with people. I'm like, I'm struggling. I've not studied for my exam. I'm like cramming with a tutor at the moment. And I like actually videoed it all. Like, because people don't want to see your perfect life.
No.
Like it's number one, it's depressing. Number two, it's not realistic. Like nobody actually is good at all elements of the life. And I think it's a lot more endearing, and you know, it's too much energy on my part to put up a front, to be honest. Like if people want to, like, I'm sat now, you can see me, thank God no one else can. I mean, my I'll actually just roll back a little bit on my chair. I mean, my ex-boyfriend's t-shirt from about 4 years ago, that's actually moth eaten.
Oh, God.
Delightful. And I'm so great, aren't I? So glam. And so that's like Instagram life. But like, would I have to go and get changed and put a full face of makeup on? No. Like, I don't have the energy. I really don't. I'm lazy. So I'm a lazy Instagrammer. So I share literally what goes on in my life. And I think people genuinely appreciate that. And I don't filter my horrible swearing mouth. I swear an awful lot. Sorry. It's very English of me. But poor mum and dad who watch my stories. and so, yeah, it's literally me, because it's like, what, how else can I be?
Yeah. The amazing thing is, like, you see you on social media, and a lot of the time you can see people and think, like, that's for show. But I did a food photography workshop with you, which was so fun. And yay. When we got together, I was like, oh, you're the exact same person. Like, there's no distinction. Like, talking to you today, it's like the Sal you see always. Like, it's just a very consistent presence and energy that you have and that you hold.
Yeah.
And people respond really well to that.
Yeah, and it's so lovely. You know, I keep, it's really funny. When I played basketball this morning, I went and played with this mate, and he said, he's from France. And he said, two of my mates follow you from France. And I just caught up with him, and they got really excited because she tagged me in the stories, and they're like, oh my God, you know, the fit foodie. That's so cool. And I get so wigged out about it because I actually forget that there's that many people who watch it. And they said to him, which I thought was really lovely, when we message her, she always writes back and has time for me. And I'm like, hell yeah. I'm one of those people who, like, literally gets this horrendous guilt. If I do somebody on scene and then just delete it, I'm like, that's a horrible thing to do. And I know, I get, like, I don't know, 50 DMs a day or whatever. But of course I'm going to spend time and write back to those people because they've got genuine questions or like they're jeering me on about something really lovely. And I'm like, God, you guys are amazing. And that's part of I consider it part of my job.
Yeah.
So if anybody wants to hit me up on DM, I'm here. I'm going to reply probably within an hour.
You're rapid. Yeah.
Time's horrendous. Yeah. And it's a beautiful thing that we've created, that Instagram's created, is like these small pockets of communities of people that have got similar interests. And we get to chat and make friends and connections. I've made some incredible friendships through Instagram. And I've met you through Instagram.
Yeah.
We're doing this. And you coached me through some really interesting nutritional deficiencies that I was experiencing just off the back of your own kindness, which I'm so grateful for. Mm.
Well, I love anyone that wants to riff on nutrition. I'm like, yes, what is it? Let's talk.
Yes, exactly right. And I think that's why, as I was saying, like I ended up sharing half my lecture notes, right? Because I find stuff really interesting. And I'm like, oh my God, I didn't know that. And I'm assuming that half my audience don't know that. And so I think I did one on sports nutrition a couple of days ago because that's what I'm studying at the moment. And it's like how athletes recover and what supplements they should use and whether creatine is actually a decent supplement. And so I posted all about that and people are like, oh yeah, I don't take creatine, but interestingly, I've never really heard of it. And now I understand there's, you know, evidence behind it. And maybe that's something I can look into for heavy lifting or whatever. So it's actually it's just like a really interesting conversation to be able to have with people when I've got access at the moment to all these journals and lectures and slides and stuff. I just think it's great and it's fun to educate people or use the platform for good, right?
I feel like it's really not? And I feel like that's really a really great example of how you can use social media in a healthy way, in like an encouraging way, a supportive way, informative way. Like, people are getting so much out of the experience. I'm curious to know, like, with doing the nutrition side of things, like how that's influenced your mindset and how you view food. Because I've also done a degree in nutrition and I had a similar experience to you, but not quite the same, but it's so easy to become obsessive with food and movement. And I remember, like, at my lowest weight, I was like exercising 10 days straight and would like have to be at the gym and like had the heart rate monitor strapped on as well. And with I did my fitness power like religiously for 10 months.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't
it's
healthy.
Addictive. Yeah.
So addictive. And I found through studying nutrition, like the way I look at food now is I'm like, oh, like this is nourishing for this reasons. And it's got this profile. And I don't look at it as good or bad. I'm like, this is really nourishing for me. And this is really good for me. And I know you've had a complete like shift in your mindset around it. And I have no doubt that's probably played a role, but from your experience, I guess.
Yeah, I think for me, I was kind of at the helm also like involved in the takeoff of, I'm doing air quotes, the clean eating experience. Mm-hmm. And the categorization of clean and not clean or good and bad foods as opposed to energy, which is what food is in its purest form.
Yeah.
And so, yes, there are sources. I think now I look at food and I used to think, like I used to look at food and say, that's bad for me. Or that is superior for me. And I used to feel superior for eating it. Yeah. So I would like, and in all honesty, I would look down on people who'd be having a Macca's and be like, oh God, that's so gross and so stupid of you. But realistically, yes, it's not. It's food. It's just food. And there is no more to it than that. There's some, as you know, there's some food that have more vitamins and minerals.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, everything's broken down into fats, carbs, and proteins.
Yeah.
And some with varying degrees of that split, right?
Yeah.
And it's about your energy intake overall. Like, yes, we can argue that peanut butter is healthy. It's one ingredient. It's healthy fats. Good on you. Go for your life. But you wouldn't sit and eat a jar of it and say that's healthy.
Precisely.
So it's having that understanding of what a balanced diet is now, which has really served me. Not buying into the diets and the spiel. The hype, oh my God, the bloody brain octane oil in your coffee and this, that, and the other. It just like drives me insane. And everything, like, don't say I'm not open to it, because I'm like, I am. I 100% want to hear people's, you know, anecdotal evidence on it. And that's fine. If it works for you, that's great, because it fits into your lifestyle and it serves a purpose and you feel like you've got control over something that you didn't have control over before. And if it's working for you, that's great. But if I want to see the scientific evidence and the biological phenomenon behind how something works, come at me with scientific papers.
Yeah.
Because keto diet, not sustainable. Paleo diet, we all moved on from that because that wasn't really that sustainable. I'm like, yeah, it works for some people. Yes, it causes a calorie deficit because you're eating high fat and then you're really satiated. So like, it, I just hate the way that stuff's packaged. And I think now I'm studying science more, the science side of it, I really want to drill down to, okay, but how does it work? Like, yeah, there's people selling me supplements to help me get into keto and this, that, and the other. But like, really, how does that work and how is it serving my body? And and is it just marketing hype? Because let's be honest, we know it's the health and wellness industry is a $1 billion industry. Yeah. And so it's in their vested interest to sell us crap.
Yeah, I know.
to sell us stuff in a million different packages so that we think it's new and shiny and we invest our money into it. But realistically, we come back to, we've never had more chronic disease.
Yeah.
We've never had more cancers. We've never had more diabetes. So we're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
And so it's like, what information do we have, scientifically speaking, from evidence that says this diet is superior over another? And we don't have it.
Oh, that,
because
that,
it's just energy. It's just energy.
That grinds my gears so much to the point where I hate that there's this one size fits all approach to nutrition. Like, I saw an influencer post a video about keto's rubbish and carbs are life and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I don't disagree with you, but I don't agree with you. Because if you're talking to someone with an autoimmune condition like myself, who's been diagnosed with PCOS, where carbs really aggravate and can cause a relapse or can
absolutely
bring about symptoms that I don't want, I'm not going to then shovel like carbs into my mouth. And I feel like you're doing so many people a disservice by providing more contradictory information by saying 100%. It's this way and not that way.
Which is exactly why I want to get my degree, because I don't want to be that person that just waffles off and like catches on to the latest thing and reads a couple of articles about it and goes, this is the next best thing. Because I definitely am guilty of that when coconut oil happened.
Yeah.
And I raved about it to people and I used it in every recipe. And I regret that massively because I now I've got access to journals and things, but it's there's no superiority other than the fact that it's got a couple of different kind of makeups in how it's built comparative to other fats. So it's fascinating how easy it is for somebody of influence to read a couple of articles online and go, this is the truth. And people buy into it. Yeah. And we have to, as individuals, be our own teachers and say, I hear what you're saying, but I want to research it, number one, properly with science, and number two, for me. Because it's not about, okay, so somebody famous is doing a diet and that's great. And you follow that person and you think they're awesome and you believe every word that comes out of their mouth, but they've got a different body to you.
Yeah.
They've got a different fingerprint to you. They've literally, like, they have different genetics and certain things that you have, they don't have. and certain environmental factors that have switched on their genetics or turned them off, you don't have. So, and the thing is as well, it's any diet that is sold to you, it's going to work for you if you can consistently stick to it, right? Mm-hmm. And it serves you, your biology, the best.
Yeah.
But if it doesn't do those two things, you're going to fall off the bandwagon. Mm-hmm. You're going to feel guilty. It's not going to have the results you wanted. And then you're going to be like, well, I've just tried another diet and I failed. Yeah. I failed as a person. I wasn't consistent with it. And it's not about that. It's about like what is going to fit into your lifestyle the easiest to help you create an energy deficit if you're trying to lose weight.
Yeah. In a healthy way too, with balance and understanding.
In a healthy way, yeah. Mm. And so it's really interesting. I'm not pro keto or against keto, really. Mm. Like I get the science behind it. Mm. I personally am low carb.
Me too.
Reason being is just I genuinely have more energy. But I know for a fact that if I went high carb, I don't have this fear of it being like a magical putting on weight scenario, which is what everybody fears.
Yeah.
It's still the same amount of energy in terms of calories per gram as protein. Mm. You know what I mean? It's seven, I think I'm getting this right, 7 calories per gram, same as protein, and then fat is 9 calories per gram in theory. So it's like, it's still the same.
Yeah,
and it all breaks down to sugar in the body. It all does the same thing. It all breaks down into the glucose that fuels your muscles and does good things. It's just what else that carb is packaged with is detrimental, can be detrimental or health promoting. So it's like pick your battles. If you like white potato, have white potato. Like it's okay, but maybe don't have the donut afterwards.
Yeah.
Or you know, have the donut, but then maybe watch your sugar intake for the rest of the day. It's just like everything in balance, man.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not sexy to sell that from a marketing perspective. And people don't want to hear it because it's not an easy fix.
Yeah.
And it's very boring. Like I wouldn't want to hear it. I've never wanted to hear it. But at the end of the day, it's everything in balance, everything in moderation. do the best that you can with the tools and knowledge that you've got. Mm. Seek out more knowledge where you can.
Yeah.
And just honestly feel how stuff reacts in your body.
Yeah. I feel like you hit the nail on the head there. Like people are promoting their truth. Like that's the truth for their body, for their level of exercise, for their, you know, whatever, for their genetic makeup, their biology. Mm. That's their truth. You know, like for you and I, lower carb works really great for us. But I remember one day we went for a walk and I was like, I'm going to have a fucking egg and bacon roll and I'm going to love it.
Hell yeah.
And I'm just like, great, whatever. And there's no attachment to that. And I think, you know, we've kind of touched on it, but that psychosomatic, like the mindset, like this is bad, therefore it is. Like there was a study done where they had two plants and they gave it all the same environmental factors, water, whatever. And they just talked to them differently, said good things, said bad things. And the plant that had the bad words consistently thrown at it didn't thrive as much as the plant that had like the good uplifting words, you know, said to it.
Yeah.
And so imagine what that does to your food when you're sitting down to a meal and you're going, oh, this is bad for me. This isn't good. It's going to make me fat, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
You're sending all these like little messages within the body. Like there is an element of like mindset behind it too, which people can become really disconnected from, I think sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we're just in a world where we talk and potentially we're contributors to it, but we stress so much about food and it's like such the be all and end all of everything. And like, oh, what did you eat today? Oh, I had, you know, a couple of glasses of wine last night. I'm feeling naughty. Goodness. And it's just like, do you know what? It's just food and drink. Mm. And like, it's fuel for you to live. It's enjoyment.
Mm.
It's a social experience sometimes. It's part of your life. You get to do it 3, 4, 5 times a day if you choose to do it.
Mm.
Let's just chill out about it.
Yeah.
It's because the more we stress, the more we analyze, the more we try and better it or we try and resolve a problem with our food or with our diet. Unless you've honestly got like a chronic disease or a disease that's diet related, it really is like sometimes it's just overwhelming to everybody to the point of it actually being detrimental. So all the diets and all the pills and all the supplements, it's like we actually need all that shit. Like just try and eat, you know, a good handful of vegetables at dinner, eat a bit of lean protein, however you want to get that in there. Try and balance it with a bit of carbs if you feel good on carbs. If you don't do it.
It's
pretty much the pretty much it.
That's
like
it.
It really is that simple.
So
and
simple.
And move as much as you feel like you've got the energy for and the ability that you've got, and balance your energy intake with that. Don't overdo it. Don't kill yourself in the gym, because really I think 10% of your energy expenditure can only be done in an hour anyway at the gym. So like, it really is to do with your intake and your food and stuff. So don't kill yourself in the gym. That's why they say 70% diet and 30% gym or whatever.
I literally did a post about this the other day because I was so over it. I was like, I think it's 80-20, but 70-30 could be.
Oh, is it? Yeah,
well, something like that. But I was like, I feel like we invest 100% in exercise and 0% in nutrition. Like, what the fuck? Yeah. Like, it's 80% well, nutrition, like, guys.
We go to the gym and then we eat shit. Crap afterwards. Yeah, because like, I've been to the gym, so I'll have like 4 Freddos. It's like, that's kind of how it works.
Yeah.
Or you could have just stayed in bed and got a couple of more hours sleep and not had 4
the Freddos.
And just really enjoyed your morning. Do you know what I mean? Like, saved yourself 2 hours in the gym. So it's weird.
And look at it beyond that point as well. Like, it's not all in and out. It's like biological impacts and eating for nourishment and taking it outside of that scope.
And enjoyment as well. Like, we can't take the enjoyment out of it. Like, I genuinely love a chocolate cake every now and again. It's my jam. Yeah. Am I going to kick myself for it? No, because I get enjoyment out of it. It's like... But I don't do it every day because I probably wouldn't enjoy it then. Do you know what I mean?
So
it's
true.
Like, that's
so true.
Like, I wouldn't then get the enjoyment. So that's why we have balance. That's why we try and aim for the balance, right, as nutritionists.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important we push the message that not everything that people promote is fair, is educated, is realistic for people. And the other thing to know is even some of the stuff that we get educated on as nutritionists is, yes, it's based on the most current evidence we have, but it's a new science. Food has been studied for probably 200 years. Yeah. We still are only learning, we're still learning a lot about food and how it interacts in the body. And like, we didn't know about the endocannabinoid system until like way into us understanding food and how the body works and homeostasis and all that jazz. So it's fascinating. We're still learning things. There's still probably an awful lot about the body that we don't know. There's still like the whole gut brain axis that we've been going on about in the last, you know, 5 years came to a head because we've found new science on it. So the stuff that we're getting told now is probably going to be outdated in 5 years. And so even listening to specialists, you know, it's like, yeah, okay, I understand the science, the current science behind that and what the studies are saying, but does that translate for me as a human? And does it work for me? Does low carb feel good? No. Okay. Don't do it then.
Precisely.
Like, you know, it's literally like, what do you feel good on and what is, you know, like, don't necessarily take everything at face value.
Yeah.
I think is the thing. And even from, I don't know if I should say this, but sometimes even from specialists, do you research?
Yes, I agree.
Because they don't know everything. I don't know everything.
Nor
There's
do I.
So many studies that I haven't looked into. And, you know, I only have brain capacity for so much.
And there's only so much that you can even invest your time into, or that might be relevant for you that's not relevant for somebody else.
Absolutely. And so my plan as a nutritionist is to specialize in actually in CBD. So
love
when
that.
It becomes, yeah, I will, in theory, I will need to specialize in that, in the sense of how it helps with homeostasis and how it interacts with the CB1 and CB2 receptors in the body. And I went over to Canada 5 times last year to do research on it. I had like a bit of a holiday time over there.
Oh my God, so good.
Could not stop researching it. And so I think that's really interesting in terms of who you get your information from is, if there's somebody you know who specializes in something, like, for example, if you were a gut specialist, seek them out because they're going to have more knowledge in that area.
Yeah. Totally.
Like my GP experience, I went to see someone with absolutely no bedside manner. And then I went to see someone who specialized in mental health and she was incredible.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, you know, pick and choose who you're getting your information from and question it.
Always, always question. And I really feel like tuning into your body is the simplest answer, but can sometimes be the hardest thing for people to step into. Yeah. And whenever I work with new clients, I'm like, do a food and symptom diary. I'm not here to judge your food intake. I'm not even like, I don't even care that much. I just want you to like record what you're eating for a week as an experiment. And then after each meal, sit in your body and go, how do I feel? Do I feel energized? Do I feel fatigued? Do I feel like I can run a marathon, or I don't know, my gurgling in my tummy, like And it's funny, when I get new clients to do that, they're often like, oh, I didn't realize like this and this was like making me feel crap. And then I'm like, cool, like let's experiment with that. A week later, they're like, oh, those symptoms that I was complaining about magically disappeared. I'm like, amazing things happen when you listen to your body when it's trying 100%. To tell you stuff.
Yeah. And that's why I don't have a lot of, I mean, I definitely eat carbs because I eat fruit and veg and stuff.
Yeah, for
but
sure.
I don't go heavy on like starchy stuff because my body, I've tuned into that and I go, I don't feel great. And whether that's like a placebo, I don't know, like it could be a psychological thing because we've all been told not to eat carbs. I don't know, but I genuinely, my body feels slow and not energized when I have starchy stuff. And so I avoid it because then I feel good and I've got all this energy to go and play and skateboard and do silly things. So yeah, that's kind of my take on it. And obviously yours as well is let's just work out what suits you.
Yeah.
And really tune into what your body's telling you. I know. And it is that simple, but it's also a very difficult thing to get someone to do when they've not done it before.
Yeah. But it just takes a little bit of practice.
Yeah, for sure. So anyway. Go and see a specialist, guys.
Exactly. Yeah. Find the right people, ask a lot of questions. I'll even link in the notes PubMed, because is that your main resource?
I love PubMed. Yeah.
So people,
or even just for the general public, Google Scholar is amazing. So if people go on, like if you don't want to read a full journal, which is totally understandable, and a lot of the time I find it really dry.
Yeah.
If you go on to Google Scholar, if you type into Google Scholar.
Yeah.
It brings up like the Google that only looks at journals and actually reference work, which is really great. And you can type in like the effects of CBD on nausea, for example, and it will only bring up like reference journals. Yeah. And then from there, you can start your search. You can go, it'll then link to PubMed and like a million other places. But you can just look for free at the abstract and the conclusion and I think sometimes the methodology. So you can look at a study and go, okay, so they found that from using CBD, nausea was reduced by 50% in cancer patients of the age of blah, blah, blah with this type of cancer. That's really interesting. The one thing I will say is to everybody, if you're looking at a journal, there's so many things that can go wrong in a clinical study as well, that they're not 100% to be trusted. And it's one part of a very small of a very big jigsaw. It's a small part of that. And that's why we have meta analysis. And, you know, like when we overview huge studies and take all the different, evidence, exactly. And say, what are we seeing as a bigger overall picture from all of these different studies in rats, in humans, in monkeys, and you know, all different age groups, all different sexes, taking into account hormones. It's exactly. And like the size of the study, there's so many variables.
So many.
So it's even, that's why we're so, we find it so difficult, I suppose, even as specialists, right? And even though I'm not qualified, but like eventually I'll find it very difficult to say, okay, this study means this, because it doesn't. It's not a conclusive result. No. It's an insight into a potential outcome for some of the population.
Yeah, and it can guide your information, your tactic.
If you find that there's enough studies that point in that direction, but there's also that thing of confirmation bias, right? Where if you think there's going to be a certain outcome from a certain treatment protocol, for example. So I think that if I eat low carb, I am going to have body fat reduction, for example. I can type in, keto diet effects on weight loss, and I'm going to find 15 journals that support my theory that if I go low carb, I'm going to lose weight. But then if you type in the opposite, you'll probably find another 50 journals that say it's had no impact on weight loss. So the confirmation bias is actually really interesting, and it's always worth searching the opposite of what you expect to find to find if there is evidence in that kind of outcome as well. Excited about it.
It's great. It's so good. And I think it's important because these are the pitfalls that so many people land themselves in, where they get like narrow vision on something and they're like, don't eat carbs, therefore I'll lose weight. And then it doesn't work and then become resentful. And it's like, why didn't that work? And it's like, maybe that's not what your body needs. Like, I know so many people that thrive on high carbohydrate diets, like, and they are lean and fit and motivated and energized and no digestive issues. And for me, if I was like, you should really not eat carbs, like, I would be doing them a disservice. I'd be like,
100%.
Not right for 100%. You.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's obviously why you do the 7-day recall and then say, how are you feeling?
Yeah.
Because, and that's why following a prescriptive diet from a celebrity is such a wild concept, isn't it? It's a money making machine for that person to package food or a system or something in a different way to make money. And we want a quick fix and we spend our hard-earned cash saying, tell me something new that I don't know. And it's
give me the magic pill.
Exactly. And it's like, and yes, of course we all want a shortcut. And I've been there. I've been at the two extremes. I've been super low weight. I've been overweight. And I'm now in this like awesome happy medium where I don't really care so much about what passes through my mouth and through my digestive tract. I know if it's healthy. I know if I'm having enough fiber. I know if I feel full. I know if I feel if I'm sad and I'm eating, because it's an emotional response. Like, what's going on when you're eating, all that jazz. And I'm just really attuned to it now. And like, if I have a bar of chocolate, I'm not going to kick myself. I don't do it every day. It's like, not a big deal.
So good. And this is why everyone loves you.
Good headspace. Oh, thank you, darling.
You're just living, breathing, like, example of just do you.
You do you. I know. Thank God people have been accepting of me, because I very much do me, and it could have gone one of two ways.
Oh, how could they not? You're infectious. You have the best energy. It's so good.
Oh, bless you.
And I feel like we could honestly talk about nutrition forever. And I feel like you have to come back and we'll do that. Nutrition. But it's been so awesome to have you on and to hear your experience and to talk all the things. It's been an absolute pleasure. So why don't you just quickly let everyone know where they can find you and stay in touch?
Absolutely. So if you want recipes and stuff, head to my blog or buy a book if you want. So book is
I'll link it all.
Thank you, darling. The book's The Meal Prep Plan. And is, sorry, after me going on and on about not selling diets, it's definitely not a diet.
It's not
a diet. It's literally like how to help yourself eat food throughout the week in a fast way that doesn't require lots of cooking time. So that's my approach. That's how you can get recipes. You can also head to the blog for free, and that's the-fit-foodie.com. Very irritating that there wasn't a simpler a simpler website for me.
Who
anyway.
Stole that?
I know. And then Instagram, you can find me at the Fit Foodie blog.
Yep. Awesome.
Amazing.
And slide into the DMs, because Sally will get
Please
back to
do.
You.
Come say hi. I would love that.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being on.
Thanks, gorgeous. I've had so much fun.
Me too.
Chat soon.
Thank you so much for tuning into the podcast. I hope you got something magical out of this episode today. If you want to keep the conversation flowing, head over to the gram. You can find me at annalise.madrell, or stay up to date with the latest podcast episodes at Coming From Experience, all one word. Be sure to share this podcast with a special someone who you think might gain a lot out of this conversation, and be sure to leave a review and let me know what you think. Until next time.